Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to do part one of a sort of a two-part episode, or two episodes that are conjoined. The first will be Bram Stoker's Dracula, 1992. The second, which we'll do next week, is Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, at roughly the same time. When was Frankenstein? Frankenstein was 94.
Early 90s.
Drew thought this would be a good pairing. I agree. Brother Jay is celebrating a birthday this week, so tip of the hat to Brother Jay.
Happy birthday. Yeah, and I actually read an article on the website Slash Film about sort of comparing these two movies as an interesting double feature.
20 years later, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the article was written, I think, back in August.
Did it recommend it as an experience?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Well, okay, Bram Stoker's Dracula. Question for you, just a format question here. Do we want to talk about the movie, the traditional plot, which we will anyway, but do we want to do that first and talk about all the great parts of the movie, or do you want to hear my big rants about it at first? Because I have some rants that I have a whole like 2 pages of rants about what I hate about this movie, but then after I did all the rants like pre-watching the movie again, pretty much. And I watched the movie divorcing myself from all of that, and I had, a different experience. So, which would you like first? It's completely up to you.
You can't mention that you have 2 pages of rants and not give us the rants.
Okay. All right. So, Bram Stoker's Dracula, 1992, mm-hmm. directed by Francis Ford Coppola, who we know from the Godfather movies, Apocalypse Now, and The Conversation. Now, Francis Ford Coppola, one of the greats of his generation. However, he makes a big movie. He's putting on a spectacle, especially in this movie. So here's my problem. Here's my rant. Here's where, like, pretty much the beginning and end of my rant is it shouldn't be called Bram Stoker's Dracula. Now, have you read the novel?
I have not.
Okay. I have a couple times. And I remember watching this movie in 1992 and thinking it was great. Because it was very stylistic and very splashy. And even though it has some flaws, even at the time, I thought it was pretty great. But Dracula the novel is not a love story. Dracula the novel is like a gothic horror adventure story. In fact, Dracula doesn't get as much play as you'd imagine. And Dracula's not even all that... Like, the gypsies, like his gypsy helpers, are much more badass in the book than Dracula ever is. You know, Dracula's limitations as a monster are pretty serious. But, and it's got, there's so many things that are so much different. Like, there is no love story. None of it. Dracula ends up turning Mina into a vampire for revenge. Strictly. She doesn't fall in love with him.
He did not cross oceans of time to go back to Mina?
No. They fucked up his plans. Mina's little band of men. Or really, Lucy's band of men. Yeah, it's a very straightforward story. the whole thing is done in, what is it called, epistolary format, where it's all letters and cables and recordings. It's all very cutting edge. If it was today, it would be some emails and some tweets and maybe like a Facebook Live video or something. So it was all very like technologically hip when it was written in the late 1800s. And again, it's a very simple sort of story. It's very, very adventure-y. And granted, you know, the novel hadn't been around very long. So this, you know, it's a new form. And again, it's fun to read, but I think, you know, Dracula in the novel, when you first meet Dracula at Castle Dracula, he's sort of an old guy with a big mustache. Like a white mustache. That's his big feature. Now, that's not in Bela Lugosi's Dracula. That's not in Christopher Lee's Dracula. That's not in Frank Langella's Dracula.
That sounds like Sam Elliott should be Dracula.
Exactly. That's kind of what it is. And then eventually he goes back in time and becomes Joseph Gordon-Levitt or whatever. Because that's how it is. And Dracula gets a little bit younger. But again, there is no big scenes of seduction or anything. Dracula goes, the plot of the novel is this: Jonathan Harker goes to Transylvania to see Dracula because Dracula wants to put together a real estate deal. He wants to buy a bunch of properties around London. And once he buys all those properties, he's going to send this dirt to the properties because he has to have Transylvanian dirt to recharge himself or whatever. So we get Jonathan Harker experiencing the sisters, the brides of Dracula, whatever. And he sort of gets stuck in Castle Dracula to die.
Oh, so the brides of Dracula are in the book.
Yeah, they are. Yep.
Yeah. So it describes, I would think, in great detail, a fully naked Monica Bellucci in the book.
It does not. No. Although I think there's probably...
Okay, that book's garbage then.
So Dracula goes to London to occupy his new dwellings, and there's a great scene of him showing up with the ship, and there's like a wolf that comes off the ship or whatever, and eventually Lucy, who, by the way, Lucy's not a big whore like she is in this movie, and Lucy is super sexed up in this movie, which, again, for this movie is fine, but in the other movie, it's not like she's a craven, wanton woman. She's just young and has some suitors. But she picks the suitor she wants. Everything, all this is straight with the movie. And Dracula ends up feeding off of her, I think pretty much randomly. And we have Dr. Seward, who's one of his professors, is Van Helsing. And Van Helsing knows about vampires, so they put the two and two together. And then Van Helsing and the three amigos, sorry about impeachment talk, but the... three amigos go out, Seward, Quincy, and Arthur, I think, right? Arthur Holmwood, Quincy, whatever his name is, and Dr. Seward go out and with...
Texan, Dread Pirate Roberts, and that one British guy.
Yeah, the British guy who's a heroin addict. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They all go out because they have to, A, kill Lucy and cut off her head, and B, desecrate all, or I guess... consecrate all of the boxes of dirt. So they do, they get a bunch of boxes of dirt on that first night, or the very first, like, first or second time they go out. At which point Dracula is like, oh, fuck you guys, and goes and decides he's gonna mess with Mina. By this time, Jonathan's come home from Transylvania because he escaped. He's super sick. He's not really, he's part of the adventure, but he's still pretty much super sick.
Does he have prematurely gray hair?
I don't know. Probably, actually. Yeah, and at the very end, they end up getting rid of all of Dracula's dirt except for one box that is being sent back to Transylvania. So they have a race to find that box, to get to the Castle Dracula before he does, so they could kill him. And they manage to track down the dirt thing. And because it's not nighttime yet, they manage to cut his head off. After fighting the gypsies, it's a big battle to fight the gypsies, which Quincy is mortally wounded. Then they cut off Dracula's head, and the story ends. And I think there was in the novel, they have found like an extra chapter that wasn't in the original published work that talks about how maybe Castle Dracula crumbled to the ground or whatever. big over the top ending, because there was a Stephen King ending there. So it's a straight up adventure novel, which is fine. And this movie takes all the beats of that and then layers on all this stuff about love never dying and everything, which is great, which is a noble cause. Francis Ford Coppola does not make, you know, simple movies, right? With the Godfathers and whatnot. Yep. So it's fine. This should be called Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula. That's my big problem.
All right.
Yeah.
Seems fair.
So if I divorce myself from that, then we can get right on to the plot if you like. Although let's start traditionally. When did you first see this movie? Did we see it together?
Yes, we did.
Okay. And do you remember liking it?
Yes. Liked it quite a bit.
And when you watched it this time, what did you think?
I thought, whoa, what is this? This movie is crazy. Not really in a good way. This is not a good movie. This is a movie that makes a lot of bold choices. I don't think very many of them work, but I do appreciate that a lot of bold choices were made.
Oh, most definitely. This is a very stylish movie.
Very. It is so much more weird than I remember. How old would I have been? 14 when I saw it in the theater? So, I mean, that probably hit me just about the right age to be distracted by all the sexiness and nudity, to really not notice just how utterly bizarre this movie was and how truly awful Keanu Reeves' accent is.
Oh, that poor guy. I do have an explanation for that. But first of all, let's... So I remember loving it. That was great. It was for 1992. It was great.
And even Anthony Hopkins. This is post Silence of the Lambs, right?
Yeah, this is Anthony Hopkins at maybe his most hammy.
This version of Anthony Hopkins belongs in an Austin Powers movie.
Indeed. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So when I watched it a couple of years ago and hated it for all the reasons I just explained. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it was so stylish, but so like put on with a putty knife. And when the first time I saw Gary Oldman's Dracula, and I remembered that I was looking at it in the costumes, I'm like, fuck this. And so I think I stopped watching. So going back to it this time, again, I got the rant out of the way first. Then I watched the movie and then I did a little more research and I found a couple of things that actually make me appreciate the movie a little more, maybe.
Well, even just the opening scenes of this movie, the Vlad the Impaler scenes, it's like soap opera level melodrama.
Oh, the whole movie is like that. Absolutely.
But they were like cartoon wars, right?
Well, okay.
Am I remembering that incorrectly?
No. Well, there's a couple of things going on. So first of all, a couple trivia things that we might want to explain some things for me. First of all, Coppola considered the Jonathan Harker character in the story kind of a nothing. He shows up in the beginning. He doesn't do much. He's pretty much just a victim. And then at the end, he's part of the hunting party or whatever, but he's never like a badass, you know? All the other guys are much more badass. So instead of, you know, he didn't need like a great actor. What he wanted was a matinee idol. So that's why Keanu Reeves came to mind. Hey, he's a handsome guy. He'll bring the young people, especially the young ladies, into the box office to see this movie. Which I hope they did. Because I think this movie made a bunch of money. But, oh my God, Keanu Reeves was horrible.
Yes.
I mean, Winona Ryder's accent wasn't great. But Keanu Reeves was laughable from the very first scene to the... Actually, you know what? His late 80s, early 90s haircut was laughable.
This movie makes me really want to revisit Dangerous Liaisons now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Valmont and... Les Liaisons Dangereuses. The thing I told you, saw that.
Sorry, what's that? Which one is that again?
Exactly. It's a French language movie, and it is subtitled, but it's black and white, and it's subtitled in just white. Then they go skiing. So you can't read large portions of this movie at the print that I saw way back when I was trying to be a completist for the... Dangerous Liaisons, you know, with Cruel Intentions thrown in there too. It's a four movie set. Oh, and I hate like costume dramas. Like I don't like this stuff just as a rule, like period pieces sort of thing. Yet again, this, I like the Dracula story. I like horror movies, and this has plenty of horror. I was surprised this time. I hadn't remembered actually how good, if a little absurd, like the horror makeup, the creature effects were.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's great.
Yeah, and there's some like baby eating in this movie.
Oh yeah, there's some dark stuff. Absolutely. So there, it's got that going for it. Okay, but the other thing that Coppola wanted to do was he was insisting no CGI. The only thing CGI in this movie is the blue flames, and that was actually part of the novel.
They were pretty rough too.
Yeah, but everything else is matte painting, miniatures, in camera effects, like double exposures and stuff. So all the shadow work, all of like seeing Dracula's eye as the train's going along, that's all practical effects.
Even the shadows, huh?
Yeah, the shadows are actually practical too, which is great. It's very effective. Now, is it totally over the top? Absolutely. This movie is not subtle.
No. There's nothing subtle in this movie.
No. In the middle of the movie, when we go to the picture show where you see the nudie film, and then like a shadow film where you see like the a shadow battle with like little shadow puppet things. Have you remember that?
Yep.
That was supposed to be the beginning. Like that fight, the Vadley and Plaler fight, was all supposed to be done like with shadow puppets. It wasn't supposed to be live action. And it kind of looks like it was supposed to be done that way, even though it was live action. Because everybody still is in shadows, but you get some ridiculous things of Gary Oldman, which is unnecessary. And I love the Dracula armor, even though it's cartoonish. It's very stylized.
The red.
Yeah, red muscly armor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the fact that he curses God and stuff, that's all interesting. None of this is in the book, of course, but oh well. It's fine.
Dracula didn't have a backstory?
No, none. Yeah. In fact, you know, a lot of the vampire myths, you know, Bram Stoker found some folklore and stuff. And they're like, Romanians have a serious thing about vampires. I think even recently, people have been dug up and their hearts cut out and stuff for fear of vampirism. So, yeah. Old traditions die hard. But yeah, pretty much all this other stuff from the movies is just kind of accumulated, kind of like the way zombies are now. Like, we seem like I have a very specific idea of zombies, but all of it is just make-em-up stuff. So, back to the film. The year is 1462. Constantinople has fallen to the invading Turks. See, like ripped from the headlines today. Prince Dracula, yeah. Gary Oldman, from Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, The Dark Knight Trilogy, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Tiptoes, Hannibal, The Fifth Element, and JFK.
Oh, sorry to interrupt so early. Remind me for housekeeping, I have a Dark Knight story for you.
Oh, excellent. Okay, Dark Knight. Anyway, he must leave his bride, Elisabetta, played by Winona Ryder from Heathers, to do battle against the Turks. A ferocious and pitched battle occurs, blah, blah, blah. Lots of people die, lots of people get impaled on sticks, and then he comes back from the battlefield victorious, only to find that the horrible Turks have sent a message into Castle Dracula saying that he has been killed in battle. And Elisabetta ends up committing suicide in grief.
Very, very Shakespearean.
Yes. And the bishop, by the way, played by Anthony Hopkins, who we know from Silence of the Lambs, Red Dragon, Hannibal, and Nixon.
Oh, I did not notice that.
Yeah, yeah, all three of these actors actually are in the very beginning, too. So the bishop is Anthony Hopkins, and he gets to tell Dracula. Dracula comes home, finds that his wife has killed herself, and is very upset, and maybe considering suicide, something proclaims he will join her in heaven, and Anthony Hopkins, as the bishop, gets to tell him the bad news that, oh, by the way, Your Majesty, but she killed herself. She's not going to heaven. At that point, Dracula flips his chicken and stabs the cross, which then bleeds, and swears that he will
you're really underselling the the Army of Darkness level of blood that spews from this cross.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is way over the top. Yes. And he is renouncing God, and he says he is going to be reborn after his death with all the powers of darkness at his command. Which is a neat trick.
It seems pretty easy.
Yeah, I mean, you think if he had that in him all along... He could have said, you know, by the power of Grayskull, I'm just going to become a super great warrior and kill everybody and avoid this whole tragedy.
Exactly.
But, oh, well.
Spend more time at home with my family.
Yes. Yes. So we flash forward in time to March 1897, the heart of the costume drama period piece that I hate. But that's okay. 1897 England.
1897, tons of heaving bosoms.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good time for that if you're in the English aristocracy. So, law clerk, I think they probably were called clerks back in those days. Jonathan Harker, played by Keanu Reeves from the John Wick trilogy and The Gift, must travel to Transylvania to close the sale of 10 London properties being purchased by Count Dracula. Upon his return, Jonathan and his fiancée Mina Murray, played by Winona Ryder, intend to be married. In Jonathan's absence, Mina goes to stay with her rich friend Lucy Westenra, played by Sadie Frost, who has just recently received 3 marriage proposals, one from Texan Quincy Morris, Bill Campbell, who we know from The Iron Lady and Logan, Dr. Jack Seward, Richard E. Grant, and Lord Arthur Holmwood, Cary Elwes, from The Princess Bride and Days of Thunder. She has decided to marry Arthur. By the way, Francis Coppola really does spice up this whole movie with the sex and love, because we see the Kama Sutra pornography that Mina is, you know, she can't bear to look at, but also can't look away. And how Lucy is pretty saucy. She's a bawdy, naughty wench.
Yes.
So, meanwhile, Jonathan arrives in Castle Dracula, following a strange carriage ride past blue flames and wolves. And this is all pretty much straight Dracula story, you know, the fact that Dracula is the coachman, as well as being, you know, he's pretty much the only person there except for the some gypsies who are mostly laborers, and then the brides who are mostly hidden away. But the Count welcomes him, treats him to a meal, an extravagant meal, but he does not eat himself because he's already eaten. And, you know, he loves the blood. Blah, 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 blah. And this is where the shadows start in earnest. And the makeup is heavy.
Well, and Gary Oldman he seems like he's having a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, he was going through a divorce during this time. And on a break during filming, something happened. And he and Winona Ryder did not get along afterward. Also, I think Sadie Frost had a problem working with him, too. Apparently, he was difficult to work with. Winona Ryder has since forgiven him and said they're great friends now. Which, you know, 20-something years later, easy to do. And maybe she's older and he's much more mellow.
But they've never copped to what happened?
No, I don't think they ever really explained what happened. But yeah, they didn't speak much after that. But, oh well. Just as well. So, we get the Count. And the Count's pretty great. You know, again, if you surrender yourself to the pageantry of it, I enjoyed it, realizing that I was going to have to just to go through a lot of cheese.
Yes, it's this whole thing. I mean, it starts at over the top and then it goes beyond.
Yeah. Of course, Dracula does the ominous thing, which is great, actually. I love this part of the plot anyway, where the Count has Jonathan write some letters. Here, write 6 letters or whatever saying, hey, I'm going to be gone for a month, and give them all to me now, and I will post them for you. So that way Dracula can control the knowledge, the information that comes out of Castle Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if they're going to off Jonathan, they could do it right away and they won't know for months. And Jonathan is pretty much a captive in the castle. And then he stumbles across 3 women who are trying to seduce him and maybe drink his blood. And one of them is Monica Bellucci from Spectre.
He doesn't stumble across them. He gets called, like, by a Greek siren.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's kind of trapped. It's a spider fly situation.
Yes.
So, but that is, again, this is actually true to the book too. Dracula prevents them from fully feasting on Jonathan.
But they're definitely showing him a good time.
They're trying to. I think in the book they're trying to more eat him or use him for blood. And in this is where we see the baby. Here, ladies, let's not mess with our guest. Here's the baby you can eat. So that's part one of the actual horror in this movie. And like I said, there's some pretty good creature effects later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the vampire effects of the ladies looked great.
Yeah. So then we go to July 1897. Jonathan's been missing for over 3 months. Mina is sick with worry, while Lucy is involved with planning for her wedding. But Lucy is not without worries either. A particularly violent summer storm has recently washed a ship of dead sailors upon the beach, and shortly thereafter, Lucy has begun her old habit of sleepwalking. By the way, this is a very clever way of going through the whole port of the, I forget the name of the ship, but when the ship ends up, the ship takes off from Romania or whatever, the Black Sea maybe, and ends up in England. And by that time, there's only... like the crew members along the way die one by one. It's explored much more in depth in the novel. And then by the end, it's just the captain who's like lashed to the wheel. And even he is dead, I think. But yeah. So Lucy starts sleepwalking and she comes home bewildered and pale. And Dr. Seward, who is works for the asylum next door, he is trying to, because he is one of the suitors, and he is, Arthur turns out to be the one she picks, Carrie Elwes, the aristocrat. So the doctor, at least, you know, he is her physician, and he tries to treat her, but she's having some symptoms he can't explain. So he sends out word to his former professor, Van Helsing, played by Anthony Hopkins. But in the meantime, Dr. Seward, we see he works in an asylum, kind of like a bedlam kind of asylum thing. And that's actually pretty lavishly. The set decoration on there is just as good as every place else. I like the big cages on the heads of the orderlies.
Yeah, what is that about?
I think it's for real. I think it's to prevent them from getting hurt.
Yeah, super creepy.
Well, we meet Tom Waits from Domino as Renfield, who may be having the most fun in this movie. I think I had read a review of this talking about, maybe it's a contemporary from now review, saying that, you know, like or hate the movie, you couldn't look at the Renfield scenes without saying, where can I get one of those straitjackets? Very stylish.
Yes. It was very, very flattering stripes.
See, and by the way, another thing Coppola did was they made Renfield the former clerk. Like real estate clerk or whatever. Yeah. In the book, he's just a crazy person who happens to be, you know, doing this thing where he wants to eat the fly, and then he wants to eat the spider because the spider eats the flies, and then he wants to eat the cat because the cat eats spiders, and then he wants to be the dog because dog eats cat, and it goes on and on. I think the scenes with Tom Waits are pretty great, especially when they offer him a kitten.
Yes. They're great. They don't really have any place in this movie. Like, there's no utility to these scenes.
No, not really.
Like, Renfield really was a servant of Dracula, right?
Oh, yeah. And he's arranging stuff. Yeah. Yeah. And Dracula needed eyes on the ground. So, when Van Helsing arrives, and I don't remember from the book how crazy Van Helsing is, but he is so... Anthony Hopkins plays this guy so over the top. I mean, he's sort of if Hannibal Lecter and Rodney Dangerfield were together.
Yeah, he's... What he really reminded me of, and this is probably going to be a stretch, I'm not sure how my mind got there, but he reminded me of a slightly more confident version of Job from Arrested Development.
Yeah, he's just all over the place. Mm-hmm. He's too clever by half, and this movie has a lot of ground to cover. So plot elements go speeding by.
Yeah, they do.
So we get this blood transfusion. And I read an article about how before everybody gets all crazy about how the blood transfusion shouldn't work because of the blood types. Yeah, it turns out you only really found out about the blood types things when the blood transfusions didn't work. But I think, I want to say in India, it was the, I don't know, Incas maybe? I can't remember, one of the civilizations, they did blood transfusions from pre-modern times because they all were the same blood type. Like, there wasn't that problem.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so everybody gives blood to Lucy because everybody's, you know, so wants to be helpful.
And she took in way more blood than was humanly possible.
Exactly, yeah. Which is, again, it's a symptom. Mm-hmm. So we've got the garlic and everything because Van Helsing ends up cracking open his vampire book. And he doesn't, especially in the book, he doesn't really explain to the guys what's going on. He knows this is a vampire thing. He's going to find the vampire. He knows that Lucy might turn into a vampire, but he doesn't have to tell everybody all the details. We get to find them out because we're reading his journal or whatever.
Yeah, he treats the whole vampirism detail like a stage magician doing a big reveal.
Yeah, kind of. Yep. And he's pretty cold. I mean, he's flippant, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, about and when Lucy eventually dies, they say, you know, he wants to bring her body in and he needs some like surgical knives and Seward is like, autopsy? No. He's like, no, I don't want an autopsy. I just want to cut off her head and take out her heart. Oh, okay.
And then he cackles like a Bond villain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He doesn't have a great bedside manner. He wouldn't be a good funeral director, let's say.
Definitely not.
So in the meantime, when, you know, Lucy's has anemia, blah, blah, blah. We had the Van Helsing thing. And she's alternatively like AIDS victim sick and sexy seductress. But Mina, who is floating around London doing her Mina thing, she ends up meeting a very well-dressed prince. Prince Vlad mm-hmm. of Skeksia or whatever. And she is strangely drawn to him.
Or so the movie tells us.
Yes.
They don't actually have any chemistry.
No, not at all. No. And they end up going to the picture show where, much like Robert De Niro in Taxi Driver.
that's the exact scene I thought about.
Yeah. And, oh, by the way, then that is interrupted by a big scary wolf going into the theater. And then that reminded me of
Manhunter.
Manhunter, exactly. Yeah. So it's all a part of a thing. Everybody steals from everybody. It's fine. So Mina falls in love with her strange prince. In the meantime, Jonathan returns home. And so she is, Jonathan, she receives word that he has been found by a convent or something and is being returned to health.
Yes, we got to see Keanu's heroic escape from Castle Dracula.
Yes,
which really just consisted of him falling out a window.
Yeah, and Mina is told that he has suffered from a violent brain fever, and so she has to go to Romania to get her man, and she has a should I shouldn't I. Because she wants to be there for Lucy, blah, blah, blah. And also maybe her prince, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe one wants to buy her rockets. So, and Lucy says, go, go. Mina says goodbye to Lucy and writes a note to Dracula saying it's all over. And then sets sails for Romania. And so Dracula, heartbroken at losing Mina to Jonathan, takes Lucy as his bride instead. Attacks her in the bed as a wolf. And causes a violent explosion of blood that kills her. Well, whatever.
He doesn't kill her.
Well, she dies. He kills her. She rises from the grave eventually, but she's dead.
All right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Now, Lucy's dead, but Van Helsing knows she is undead. And he can see the fangs in her mouth and knows that she is Nosferatu. By the way, do you know the story between Nosferatu and Dracula?
No.
Nosferatu is an unauthorized adaptation of Dracula.
The like movie from the 20s?
Yep. And the Dracula estate, or sorry, the Stoker estate sued Murnau, I think is the director of Nosferatu. And so he had to take the name of Dracula off of it. Even though Nosferatu has Renfield and everything, I think. So the Stoker clan isn't very happy about that.
Was Nosferatu a term from the novel?
I'm not sure. Good question. But yeah, there was I think there was a lawsuit preventing him from using it. And I think Dracula itself was a stage play that I think did have the Stoker family seal of approval on it. And that was eventually where, what is it? It's not James Whale. It's Todd Browning was the director of Dracula, I think. Anyway, so he, Van Helsing explains to Arthur, Jack, and Quincy that to give her peace, he must cut off her head and take out her heart. So they are horrified and think that he is just a sick old coot. And then they spend the night in Lucy's tomb and find her returning with a child in her arms. Now, I always love the bloofer lady. I don't know. They had some where you saw the newspaper of the time talking about a mysterious lady who's picking off children, abducting children.
Oh.
And she's the bloofer lady. And the reason why they called her the bloofer lady is because the child that she tried to abduct and kill was calling her the beautiful lady. But, you know, had a lisp or whatever. So anyway, yeah. So Lucy terrorized the town, finding children to sacrifice or eat or whatever. It's again very scary. But when we see Lucy, yeah, she is definitely, she's got a problem. I mean, she's dead, but she's also, you know, got some serious issues. So, she returns with a child in her arms and, you know, mayhem ensues. And, they end up, driving a stake through Lucy's heart. And then Van Helsing beheads her. And then they are motivated to seek out the Count and destroy him. Now, Mina and Jonathan then return to London, only to hear that Lucy has died. And one night they have dinner with Van Helsing, and Jonathan realizes that he knows Count Dracula and that he sleeps at Carfax Abbey. After securing Mina at Dr. Seward's sanitarium, the five of them, Van Helsing, Jonathan, Quincy, Jack, and Arthur, pay a visit to the Abbey in order to sterilize Dracula's earth-filled crates. Meanwhile, Dracula is paying a visit to Mina, and when she learns that her prince is actually the vampire who killed Lucy, she becomes extremely upset, but not upset enough not to be still attracted to him.
Yeah.
So he drinks from her and then bids her to drink, and but then he stops her because he doesn't want to condemn her. But then again, of course, Van Helsing goes into the room and they attempt to destroy him, but then he changes into hundreds of rats and scurries away.
Well, first he changes into that bat creature.
Yeah, that big old bat creature, which is great. I love that creature.
That was a good jump scare too.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, but you skipped over the ridiculous orgasm that Dracula was having when Mina was sucking at his teat.
Yeah, there was teat sucking. It was not great. It's, yeah. Yeah.
It seems like that, which made me wonder, like, how many takes did Gary Oldman have to sit there and make those ridiculous noises and faces?
Perhaps I should think better of the man, but somehow I think perhaps he was asking for too many rehearsals was maybe why he and Winona Ryder and Sadie Frost didn't get along after a while. I don't know. I could be wrong.
Could be.
Yeah. At this point, Dracula knows he cannot stay in England any longer and books passage to Transylvania. Mina and the men follow close behind, and Dracula is in mind contact with Mina, but Van Helsing knows Dracula's plans. But Dracula knows theirs. By the way, in the novel, this is explained much more completely, where in the dusk and at dawn, Van Helsing can hypnotize Mina and find out, like, get a peer into Dracula's head. But Mina is sort of reluctant to do it because she realized it could be a two-way street.
Smart.
Blah, blah, blah. It's going to yada, yada, the final chase scene. Which, even in the book, the final chase scene really is, like, just the last, maybe the second to last chapter. Like, it's a lot of setup. And then, oh, yeah. And then we chased him down hundreds of miles and then end up chopping off his head. All was well. Huh.
Yeah, there's, like, a whole fun action movie just in these couple minutes where they're planning on how to head him off at the pass, and then they miss him and they have to retool, and there's some subterfuge. And
oh yeah, this is actually half of an Indiana Jones movie right here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. complete with like lines getting drawn on maps.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you can see where this as a miniseries would work too, because mm-hmm. by the final last couple chapters of the miniseries, you could have a couple hour long chases.
Yes. Also like the last half of Tombstone.
Yes, exactly. By the way. Yeah. So Mina and Van Helsing end up going a different way than the other guys do. And Dracula sort of doubles back, blah, blah, blah. And Van Helsing ends up putting a circle around Mina, like salt or whatever you do. I haven't seen The Craft in a while, so I don't know the actual recipe. But he ends up putting a communion wafer on her forehead, which burns her forehead. And they stay inside the circle, although throughout the night, Dracula's three brides are tempting Mina to join them and killing the horses from their carriage. And as the next morning, Mina sleeps in the circle, Van Helsing visits the castle and beheads the vampiresses, throwing their severed heads into the gorge. Then near sundown, the gypsy wagon bearing Dracula in his crate approaches the castle. Jonathan, Arthur, Quincy, and Jack are riding hard to catch up.
By the way, the way that this was all kind of edited together, it really looked like Van Helsing. He was kind of chill about the Brides of Dracula. And then they killed the horses, and that's when he got ticked off and had to go cut their heads off.
Yeah, well, you know.
I assume that's not really how it went down, but...
Yeah, it works.
That's how it looked in the movie.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that doesn't like people much, but, you know, likes animals. So, Jack and Quincy are riding hard to catch up. Mina and Val Helsing waiting inside the castle. Mina calls up a blue flame to protect Dracula. And as the gypsy wagon enters the courtyard, a gypsy stabs Quincy in the back. Jonathan attempts to open Dracula's box, but the sun is set and Dracula bursts forth, his strength revived. Again, this is where it differs from the book. Jonathan slits Dracula's neck and Quincy stabs Dracula through the heart with a sword. Mina screams. Arthur races forward to finish Dracula. Harker stops him and says, "Let them go. Our work here is finished. Hers has just begun." So as Quincy dies, Mina sits with Dracula on the chapel floor inside the castle. She kisses him and he begs her to give him peace. Out of love, she pushes the sword the rest of the way through his heart. The burn on her forehead disappears. The wound on the altar cross repairs itself. Dracula dies. His face becomes youthful again. And Mina gives him his final release by cutting off his head. By the way, the original synopsis is by B.J. Kuehl from IMDb.
Yeah, during that chase, this was an indelible image in my mind from watching the movie way back when it first came out. The images of the sun setting were great.
Oh, yeah.
Nearly iconic.
This whole movie is, it's gorgeous. Like, they spared no expense for the costume. The fact that he has, like, a huge, like, train of a robe in the beginning that's all in red. And, I mean, all the colors in this movie are all well thought out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely lots of style. And, yeah, lots of little things. Again, the shadows are a whole different character in it. And all the little nods, I think, to the earlier movies and to the novel. I think, you know, well-received if you realize that you're watching sort of an over-the-top popcorn movie.
I mean, as soon as you hear Keanu Reeves speak, you have to alter your baseline.
Yes.
For what you expect from this movie.
Oh, it's just so bad. I mean, he could have just picked an English actor who was pretty. They didn't have to pick a name brand, but you know, again, that was on purpose. They wanted a name brand.
Maybe don't make him be British.
Yeah, they exactly. They
had American characters in the movie.
Yeah, well,
it's not that much more of a stretch.
Except that the one American character they had was over-the-top American. Like, he was a cliched American character. Howdy, ma'am. I'm going to pull out my giant Bowie knife.
He was Matt Houston.
He was Matt Houston. So, you know, once I divorced myself from the fact that it's called Bram Stoker's Dracula, which I really disliked. I hate it. It should be called Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula. And I know why Coppola wanted to name it Bram Stoker's Dracula. It was like, I guess there's some other movies that do the same thing. But come on, this has a lot less to do with the Bram Stoker novel and more to do with taking the Bram Stoker novel and turning it into a love story. Because again, it is not that. It isn't. It just isn't. There's been some really fun things that have been done with the Dracula characters, like Anno Dracula by Kim Newman. There's been a couple of Anno Dracula books.
Where, I've read that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty fun. I haven't read it a long time ago, but I thought it was really interesting. Also, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen does something fun with Mina Harker. Mm-hmm. And so that's fun, you know. So, I mean, there's plenty of good examples of Dracula, and I think this is a perfectly acceptable 90s Dracula. It's no worse than Frank Langella's Dracula. It's no worse than the Hammer Dracula films. But I don't know. So, I'm not Jason, I'm not Brother Jay, I can't give it a grade, but, you know, if as long as you manage your expectations, I think you're going to have a fun time. Now, did you think it was worth it?
Yeah, I think it's worth it. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on here. I mean, this is a movie where when Dracula is looking lustfully at somebody, it cuts to just a shot of blood cells.
Yes.
It does that a couple times. I mean, that's the type of movie that you're watching. But it's well crafted. I mean, it's well made. It looks good. You know, especially when she's in scenes with Keanu Reeves, it makes me realize that Winona Ryder is good. She's a good actor.
Oh, yeah.
Because she was given some shit in this movie, and she sold it.
Well, that's the thing. In Godfather 3, Sofia Coppola gets a lot of crap for being a bad actress. Mm-hmm. But I think what the movie really suffered from is that Winona Ryder wasn't that character.
Right.
Because Winona Ryder could have made that character with the same crappy lines much mm-hmm. more interesting.
Yeah. And this movie also managed to convince me that, convince 14-year-old me that Winona Ryder was sexy.
Yeah, this is so pre when she cut her hair for Reality Bites.
Yeah, well, I mean, even watching it this time, older with some more perspective, I wouldn't call her sexy. I mean, she's pretty enough, but
yeah,
it's just not that. She's no Monica Bellucci.
Oh no, she's not even a Sadie Frost.
No,
but yeah, she is fine. And again, you know, the guy characters are fine. Everybody seems to be like stage acting. They are very big. So
none bigger, and I say this with all the stuff that Gary Oldman did in this movie, none went bigger than Anthony Hopkins.
Exactly, yes, yes. Yeah, kind of like maybe the George C. Scott thing where Coppola said, okay, give us just one crazy over the top for just for my amusement, and then he used all of those scenes.
No, I have to think Anthony Hopkins was really just feeling himself after Hannibal.
He must have gained like 20 pounds over the course of the thing just from scenery chewing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But still. Yeah, so...
And wait, there is the scene when after the blood transfusion... This completely baffled me. Maybe you can explain this to me. After the blood transfusion, Van Helsing was trying to tell the three wise men about vampires. And while trying to explain it, they weren't believing him. And while trying to explain it, they looked back and he was gone. And then he appeared. He had hidden himself behind a gravestone. And then he just kind of revealed himself like Job. and was like, see? Exactly. And they were all like, oh. And that whole exchange made no sense.
Well, okay.
Can you explain this to me?
I can. I think he was explaining to them. He wasn't so much as a supernatural thing as much as a scientific thing. I think it's called the Carbonaro effect. Are you familiar with the Carbonaro effect?
No, please explain.
It's a hidden camera TV magic show starring Michael Carbonaro, where he does magic in front of people, close sleight of hand magic. And to real people, though, freak them out. it's actually a pretty good show. He's funny, and he does good close-up magic, so there's a lot of fun to be had there. That's all I have. I don't got nothing. It makes no sense. You're right. He's a magician.
Da-da-da-na.
Yeah.
Da-da-da-na. Psh.
Yeah. It's crazy. So I got nothing.
That was the single most baffling scene in this entire batshit crazy movie.
You're absolutely right, though. He just says there are stranger things than even you can comprehend. See?
like I can see you hiding behind that tree.
And also,
well, now you can.
Exactly. Well, and what other tricks do you have up your sleeve, old man? Come on. Like, you've been saving this? Holding out on us? It's like, yeah, that's what I do. That's how I get the chicks. You don't give away all your stuff at once. So, anyway. So, you have a story about the Dark Knight to tell me.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not about the Dark Knight.
Okay.
But,
If we're done with Dracula.
Yeah, we can be done. Okay. It's worth it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if after everything we've said still makes you want to see this movie, then go for it. You'll have a great time.
Yeah, I think so. You'll have a good time. It's not, ain't Shakespeare, folks.
Yes. So Dark Knight. This is also, I told this story to one of my coworkers, and I realized, maybe this is not the type of thing I should be sharing at work. But I'm going to share with you, because you enjoy making fun of my mental health.
You are not alone. I am here with you. We're all a little crazy, not in a creepy way. You are not alone.
Yeah, or lack of.
That is the least charitable assessment of my reaction to it, but sure.
Sure. Well, on a previous episode, I don't remember which one, I was, for some reason, you or Jason got me going on some of my idiosyncrasies, and one of them was not liking to step on lines.
Yes.
And I describe how far I tend to take that sometimes. So the other day, I had both of my children with me, and we were going into Target. And we got up to the door where they have, when you walk in, it goes from one type of floor to another, and the floor inside is like square tiles, they're pretty small, right? Mm-hmm. And my oldest daughter turned to me and she goes, she went, Baba. She calls me Baba. She goes, Baba, let's play a game. Let's walk all the way through the store without stepping on any lines. And I got really excited. And I was like, oh, you have no idea. And I turned to her and I said, child, you merely adopted the dark. I was born into it. And she just looked at me, like, she doesn't even react to when I say shit like this anymore. So she just looked at me and she's like, so we're not going to step on the lines? So I was like, yeah, okay, yes, we're not going to step on the lines. So yeah, we did that.
I love that.
And I was like, man, if you were more observant, little lady, you'd notice I never step on the lines. And this is not a game you're going to win because I have a lifetime of practice.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so the other day I was talking to my friend at work about Kelly and her dual zone temperature in her car. Mm-hmm. But the fact that my wife, Kelly, she has to have both zones at the same temperature. Which, to my way of thinking, because she is usually cold and I am usually warm, I think the dual zones is perfect. Because that way I can turn mine down and she can turn hers up, especially this time of year. Mm-hmm. But the fact that she has to have them both at the same thing, otherwise it kind of bothers her a little bit. Just a little bit. It's like the line thing, probably.
Yeah.
It's like, so it amuses me.
Like, you could live with it, but you don't want to and you don't have to.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm an adult. It's my car. I paid for it. I can do whatever the fuck I want. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was recounting this story to a friend of mine at work who then immediately says, okay, so I have a thing where the volume on, like, say, the car stereo has to be an even number. Like, I will never turn the volume to 17. It'll always be 16 or 18. And it doesn't have to be, but it should be. And then later, she had some, like, leftover Halloween candy in a Ziploc bag. And so she says, hey, you want a Tootsie Roll? Because she had, like, 100 Tootsie Rolls or something. I said, sure. And I grabbed one. She goes, no, you have to have two. You have to have an even number. And today, we had a celebration, a work anniversary. Two people got their 20-year pin, and one person got their 10-year pin. And so we brought some food, because that's what we do. And I brought lawn darts, which are a fun appetizer to make. Easy, take a little time-consuming, but easy. It's a black olive that you put a slice of pepperoni. You kind of make it into a cone shape. And shove the small end into the olive, and then you fill up that little cone with cream cheese. A perfectly delightful little thing, and they look like little lawn darts if you're familiar with those.
Yeah,
yeah. By the way, they go like hotcakes.
It sounds. I think I've had them. It sounds very rich.
Yeah, they're a little rich. I mean, depending on what kind of pepperoni you get and stuff, but yeah, they're good though. It's all like fairly healthy fats and some protein, and yeah. Yeah, you know, of all the other crap we had there, like cupcakes and stuff, it was a relatively healthy option. And I managed to bring them out earlier today because somebody was complaining, and I'm like, eat a pastry. If nothing else, shove it in your pastry hole. Because she was fighting with somebody else, like, in a playful way. And she's like, I can't eat pastries, because she's a diabetic. I'm like, okay. And someone's like, it's like, eat an orange. I'm like, that's not going to work either. So I said, hold on. And so I go to the refrigerator and bring out the lawn darts like 2 hours before the rest of the food comes out. Because, by the way, it's a surprise party because these people didn't know they were getting their pins. So they didn't bring any food, which, again, it would have been a great opportunity to make them feel guilty. But I opted to go the high road because they noticed that other people brought food. They're like, why are you bringing food? Yeah, don't worry about it. So I brought my lawn darts out. And I gave this coworker I've been talking about earlier, I gave her like 5 lawn darts. And she said, I had to go back and get another one because, you know, even numbers. Yeah, okay. So we all have all these little idiosyncrasies. And I know I have mine, for sure. It's just, it does amuse me when it's pointed out. And it's not just a you thing. Although the fact that you're my youngest brother does not make it any less fun, for sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, so are we done with Dracula?
I think we are.
Okay, so I believe you're going to be hearing this before Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving. So if you celebrate American Thanksgiving, happy Thanksgiving coming up. Happy birthday to Brother Jay. And next week, we'll talk about Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Sort of the Kenneth Branagh version of the Francis Ford Coppola treatment.
Yeah, that's... Can't wait to talk about that.
Yeah.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to